It's just a very different orientation, and it's a very different way to live in a way, because life is just good. And now it's more playful. Like, hey, what can I do in my business to grow and to make more money, but with boundaries? Now, I'm not willing to trade what I traded before for a certain level of success, which means that there's probably a limit to that that I'm okay with.
It's often the little things, small behaviors that can change our lives. That's the power of a financial edge. I'm Ed Meek. I'm a financial advisor with a passion to help you retire early, save more, and live better. Welcome to Ed's Edge, the podcast to help you live the life you've always wanted.
You know, James, when we started doing podcasting, I never actually thought we would have a gangster on our podcast.
Me neither, Ed.
But today we have a gangster on. In our world, we have someone that I would consider a gangster. Her name is Christina Wise, and she's a real estate mogul, millionaire coach, creator of several multi-million dollar companies, international speaker, named one of the 100 most influential real estate leaders in the country. And I can go on and on. I mean, the list is very long.
It's long,
but
yeah.
We feel very fortunate having Christina on. Welcome, Christina. Please share with us a little bit more about yourself and what your goal and what you do is.
Well, my goal is simple. I mean, my story, simply put, is that I've been an entrepreneur, business owner my entire career. And I did well in the sense that I built a really great business. I even had a really nice exit. And entrepreneurship was just my world. But what I did is I sacrificed everything else for my business and for that success. And it left me in a really serious health crisis in 2013, 2014. And kind of the moral of that story is twofold, is that one is that I'd spent 10 years building this business. I mean, sacrificing my health, my family, my friendships, everything that many of us do is very highly motivated entrepreneurs, thinking one day I'll be rich and famous, and then I'll worry about all these other life concerns at that time. And when I got sick, this was a multi-million dollar business. It was putting an easy seven figures into my personal household account every year. And that was great. Like, it was great money. But one, I was never satisfied. Like, no matter how big I got, it was never enough. And I lived in this constant state of never enough, never enough. There's the next place to go, the next place to go. And that type of just merry-go-round took me to my knees. And when I had this unexpected health crisis, I thought I was healthy. I was running marathons amongst everything else I was doing. But my business, within 12 months, 9 to 12 months of me getting sick, completely deteriorated. I mean, it went from paying me $1 million a year to where I was putting money into it to keep it going on top of the stress of trying to save my life and figure out what was happening to me. So that was like this big aha. Like, when I needed my business to take care of me and I had 50, 60 employees, I had a couple, part-time partners, so to speak. And I thought that I did it right, but it fell so quickly. And I just realized, like, oh my God, I sacrificed everything and I'm fighting for my life for this business that when I needed it, it just like, you're out, I'm out. So that was that kind of wake up call that as entrepreneurs, how much we sacrifice for this one day, someday. On the other hand, I had just been privately investing in real estate and buying houses and flipping things on the side. And it wasn't my mission. It's not what I did for a living. I wasn't trying to do it to get rich. That was my business. I was just doing it because I wanted to one day have a bunch of real estate assets I could live off of. But that was so far in the future. And what was interesting about that whole story is that my business gave up when I gave up, but I had one, I was able to sell one piece of real estate that I was able to cash out that paid me about $250,000 that I actually used to save my life. I don't think I'd be here today if I didn't have access to that capital. And then I had a couple other properties that were just, it wasn't a ton of cash flow, but it was just some cash flow that was covering some bills while I was going through this whole thing. So the whole moral to that is that it just became this realization of, oh, there's more to this money game that meets the eye. And it's not just about investing to retire one day. It's not just about building a big business and having these high ego incomes. Money is actually this thing that is meant to support our lifestyle, to support our well-being, to enrich our families, and to give us time back in all these things. But when we're chasing this dollar and chasing the success and even chasing retirement, money just doesn't necessarily work out the way we want it to. So going through that whole kind of awakening, if you will, and realization just caused me to want to teach what I teach now, which is just really a money mindset and an understanding of money from like this inside out holistic way that we can apply to ultimately live better lives.
Wow. That's a lot. That's I'm so sorry for what you went through. But based upon where you're at today, it seems like you use that as a learning experience to where you're at and to, on top of it, be able to help other people. I mean, that's amazing. You know, one question I had when you were sharing that along the way was, you said all of this was happening, but it was never enough.
That's right.
What do you mean by that? And what did you take away from that?
Yeah, I mean, no matter what like rung of success I got to, it was never enough. There's the next place to go. And I think we see this, I mean, this is probably something that is very, we all kind of can fall into this. But I mean, we've heard story. I mean, I've had friendships with those that, you know, they make $100 million a year, but they want to be in the billionaire club and they're just not satisfied that having $100 million net worth isn't enough because they haven't reached that next level of status. And so it's just being aware that there's just such an easy trap to fall into when we're chasing kind of that next thing and we never know if enough is enough and enough. And in money terms, when we just look at it financially, it's one of the principles I teach. One of the first principles I teach is that I think it's just really important for our overall just fulfillment and overall well-being and sense of satisfaction and even an ability to feel financially secure with less financial conflict and anxiety is to know some numbers very simply, like how much money is enough? Like how much money is enough that if this is all I had, it would actually be plenty. And it doesn't mean we stop there, have to stop there, because you know I'm still challenged by creating and growth and becoming these different things. But it's great to say, to be at a place that, yeah, if this is it, I've got plenty of money. Like I can live a really good life on you know this amount of net worth and this amount of cash flow. So I just think it's a very important philosophical question to think about and to try to find the answer to.
So well said. I appreciate you sharing that. You know, it ties to the clients that we work with when we go over those practical planning steps. And during retirement, there is that notion, either consciously or subconsciously, of it is not enough. I know I can retire now, but I need to chase that next thing. And so I'm curious from your point of view, Christina, thinking back to pre-2014, I think is when you said the condition arise for you. Up until today, how did your viewpoint on money change? You talked a little bit about it, but I'd like to tap into that. So how did you see money in the, say, the early 2000s, and how do you see it today? What's the difference there?
I'd say before I saw money, I mean, it was certainly the chase of it, but it was more through money was attached to my identity, which was attached to my success. So the more successful I was, the more important and maybe the more worthy I was and the more, so it was very external motivated and money was this symbol of my importance. It was a symbol of my contribution to the world, but it's more like identity. Like I got to feel better about myself the more money I made because then I got to look better to other people, I guess. So money was always out there, up there, going towards it. And again, like the goalpost would always shift. I remember thinking, you know, in my mid 20s, if I ever had $1 million, I'd be rich and I would sit on the, you know, banks of Costa Rica. You reach your first $1 million and it's like, it was nothing. I didn't even think about the moment that happened because I was already striving for, you know, the next million or the next million after that. So I'd say that was how my whole life was really organized. Success and money, and they symbolized each other in a way. And now it's about time and freedom. And I mean, I built this great business that was nationally recognized and just was doubling in like every year growth wise. But I didn't have a life. I'm like, my business owned me. Like, I didn't have time. I was constantly herding cats. I was totally in crisis mode. I didn't even realize how stressed I was. I had a stress stroke, was kind of what set this whole thing off. You know, I didn't realize I was living that life. And so now it's not about the stuff. It's not about the status. It's not about the, you know, my who I am and how I value myself as it tied to how successful I am. I still like to be, I still like success, don't get me wrong. But now it's like, organize my money and my my how I grow my money, how I think about my money, how I manage my money, how I tend to my money in a way that gives me freedom and really gives me that time and choice. And that now, you know, I still own a business, but I'm not motivated by size of business. I'm motivated by the lifestyle that my business affords me, because I don't need to be attached to size anymore, because my ego doesn't need that to feel good about myself. So it's just a very different orientation, and it's a very different way to live in a way, because life is just good. And now it's more playful. Like, hey, what can I do in my business to grow and to make more money, but with boundaries? Now, I'm not willing to trade what I traded before for a certain level of success, which means that there's probably a limit to that that I'm okay with.
You specialize in financial education for self-employed people, small business owners. In what ways do you do that?
One, I mean, I've never had a real job, so I don't know what it's like to get a consistent paycheck. But I can tell you, starting off self-employed, you know, when I got my, basically started in real estate sales, and that's where my journey started, you know, that was self-employment. And I worked hard, I hustled, I made a really good income of a self-employed person, but I was always broke. So, you know, I was top sales in my firm, in my city, yet I was always broke. And I couldn't figure out why that was the case. But I just learned early on, like, oh, when you're non-W-2 and like a lot of these self-employment, you can earn a lot of money, but there's these big, you know, I'd get a huge banner month, a six-figure month, and then I'd have 3 0 months. Then I have another six-figure month, and I'd have 3 0 months, kind of the nature of that type of business. And it took a long time for me to figure out, like, how do I manage my money in a way that with these big fluctuations, I'm not always kind of chasing the next commission, chasing the next sale, chasing the next dollar. And when I learned how to do that effectively, then, you know, I have empathy for self-employed and small business owners, because it's harder to manage your money and to create that consistent cash flow and really build towards a retirement that you can more or less bank on. That is much easier to do as a W-2. So I've been there, done that. I know how hard it is as self-employed to be able to create real wealth and financial freedom. And so that's why I'm really passionate to teach those that don't have a regular income.
That's appreciate you sharing that. My mind goes immediately to, again, that shift when people go from growth mode to income mode, where they need to live on their assets, right? And most people, to your point, are W-2'd and are used to that steady paycheck. And so the same feeling and angst applies when now this is it, right? And what's the mindset I need to have? And what's the strategy I need to create so that I feel good, that I can live the life I want to live and never worry about my financial assets? And that's the mindset I'm hearing you teach. And so that's so reassuring to hear for that. And so, you know, you talked a little bit about in the past about money and energy. And I love that those two words tied together, how money can provide energy. Share a little bit about what you mean by that. I'd love to hear.
You know, there's two facets to that, is that there's kind of the metaphysical woo-woo side, and then there's the very practical black and white side. And, you know, the woo-woo side just means that life is energy, and we need movement, we need creation, we need you know, we invent, we move things, we can push energy, we can create energy, we can attract energy. Energy changes forms, for example, like you can look at water and then it can change the form of ice, even though it's still, you know, the water molecules. So we understand that. So that's kind of the woo side, that we want to give our money energy as the ones that push the kind of the energy into it in a way. But on the practical side, it's I like to think of the energy of money as cash flow. So the way money's taught in many capacities, even a lot of retirement, it's like, hey, build your retirement and use these vehicles to do it. And people get confused, like, should I do a self-directed IRA or should I invest in, you know, a traditional IRA, or should I max my 401k? So just kind of that, when it comes like around retirement, a lot of times that's the conversation. And I like to look at it through an additional lens, and want, like, the vehicles, yes, are important, but one, it starts with how much money is enough. And that how much money is enough is the destination. So we know how much energy we even need to give to this thing to get there. So how much net worth do we need that's going to provide the cash flow, meaning that income from the assets that will take care of our retirement? So we need to know that. And, you know, if we're going to create $100 million net worth, that requires something different than creating $10 million net worth, which requires something different than $1 million net worth. So we have to start like with an end in mind, so we know what type of energy and momentum and management accountability we need to give to it. So that's how much money is enough. Then the second piece is that, okay, how much does it to retire, so to speak? The next one is, how much does it cost to live my life? So it's getting really grounded in, like, hey, if my mortgage were paid for, if I didn't have any debt, how much does it cost to live my life? And just getting clarity on that. And I know that's what you guys do, is help people get to these numbers, but I'm always so surprised at how many people have planners and things that never know the answers to these questions, because they come to me and I ask them these very basic questions like, I don't know, I just give my money to the planner and I think I'll have enough. I think they're investing it. I think they're doing these things. I'm like, no, we need to know our numbers. So it's, how much money does it cost to live our current life? How much money do we need to invest to be able to hit that financial freedom number? If we're a W-2, it may or may not be enough to just match out our 401k, for example. But people have been taught that I'll be fine if I just match it, without knowing these numbers. So all of that, though, we can't pay our bills with, I can't pay my bills with the equity in my real estate. We can't pay our bills with what we have in stocks or in our index funds. We pay our bills through income, and that's called cash flow. So the practical side of energy as money is to be conscious and conscientious of all money, the money that comes in during our working years, and to really look at, how do I maximize my income? How do I create more value? How do I command more dollars so that I can create more energy, more flow into my life? Because that's flow in. How do I manage the outflow to make sure that I'm not spending everything I make and go deeper in debt? So the money, the banks get the energy of the money and we don't get the energy, because ultimately the real energy of money we want to put into effect is called compounding, is that compound interest. But we, by how well we manage it and control it and what we do with it, gives it the amount of energy it needs, or we don't give it enough energy where we just end up without enough. But to think in terms, I'll sum all that up to say that, to me, energy is cash flow in the movement of money through our life into these different places.
It's an income game, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We know that. I mean, one of the things you mentioned was how ironic it is that people say they're seeing a planner and then they don't even really have the answers to that. And, you know, the first thing that popped in my head was, well, then they shouldn't be calling them a planner, because that's exactly what they should be helping them with. And so it's crazy, because people just do not have the answers to these questions. But sometimes, and it's really crazy, sometimes we have people come to us and they're like, yeah, I'm going to work for a couple, few more years. And all of a sudden we're like, you can actually retire right now because you, we can set it up in this way where we can create that income stream. They don't even realize it. It's very, very powerful, but sometimes just having that game plan, I mean, that's what we help. That's what you help them with. It's really, really, really important. Another thing that popped in my head with all the things that you were saying was, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see business owners, you know, making when it comes to money?
Wow. Again, since I work primarily with business owners, I see lots of mistakes. And first of all, I've made all these mistakes. And so I'm not sitting in some ivory tower. I've made all of these and I see, you know, maybe younger versions of me making the same mistakes. One of the biggest mistakes, just financially speaking, I see small business owners make is they put all of their money back into their business. And so they pay themselves enough to, you know, pay the household bills. They pay themselves maybe an extra dividend if they have some extra, you know, something they extra they want to pay for. But ultimately, they leave all that extra cash in the business and they reinvest it back in the business. And a business loves to eat money. So every dollar we leave in our business will just eat every last dollar and it just will digest it and who knows where it goes. So that's the biggest mistake. And so what happens with business owners, and I've worked with so many, is they're putting their whole life into this. And let's just say business owners where they have a decent profitability, you know, a nice, healthy six-figure profit that they're paying their household. They put everything back in the business to grow it. They spend all their money and they're just not thinking that in 20 years, they're going to want to retire from the business and they have no assets. And they reach a point where maybe they kind of thought they could sell the business or they'd just worry about that later on. And they're 20 years older and they realize like, I don't have an exit strategy. My business really isn't sellable. If it is sellable, it's I'm learning now 20 years later that it's not going to be for enough money to retire. And so I talk to a lot of small business owners who have reached kind of the mid-50s maybe, and they're panicked. Like, I have no strategy for retirement. I'm tired now. I don't want to be working and doing this work this hard for another 20 plus years. So I think that's the biggest mistake that I see is business owners. They don't diversify their money outside of their business. And while they're building the business and using their business to cash flow and to create as much cash flow as possible, they're not also investing in building a portfolio. And it comes to bite them at, you know, somewhere down the line.
Yeah. We have a saying that you're alluding to of too much of anything can cause some issues. And what I'm hearing you saying is, yes, you're running this business and it's providing, you know, that income for you, but that shouldn't be the only part of your life. You know, there's more to it and you've experienced that firsthand. And it sounds like you've seen a lot of business owners, you know, the business owners we work with, we have as well. We echo that sentiment. You know, I'm thinking about some practical tips. If you were to summon into perhaps a couple, two or three for somebody, certainly can be a business owner, but doesn't have to be in their 50s that, you know, within what you coach and what you help them with, they have a goal of say 10 more years down the road if they want to accomplish certain things. How would you coach their mindset? Because that is something that I think is massive, right? There's one thing to take steps and help, you know, with the math equations. It's another thing to say, I am motivated to do this and I want to accomplish this and I'm willing to sacrifice some things to get there. So how do you go about coaching their mindset to getting to where they want in somewhat short order?
Yeah, love that question. And just to go back real quick to maybe the second mistake that feeds into answering this question that business owners make is that, like I said, the first one, they reinvest everything back in the business and they're not diversified in other, you know, assets and building out their portfolio. What also happens that I think that entrepreneurs get some bad advice from CPAs. And so they basically live their personal life out of their business and they live very expensive lifestyles out of the business. If they've got a, you know, nice seven-figure business, for example, and I see this all the time. And so they're going on trips, they're staying in very expensive five-star hotels. And the business can write it off and their CPA is saying spend every last dollar. So again, they're either reinvesting in the business for growth And or they're spending the money to keep their taxable income low as possible, which means they're not paying themselves, which means they don't have enough money to invest outside of just what it costs to live their lives. And it just can be bad advice. And like I said, in those two things combo, I find myself coaching a lot of, you know, actually getting clients that are like in their early 50s to mid 50s. And then that next thing, like you said, is like they kind of reach this holy shit moment of, I'm just now realizing that I don't have any type of net worth. And I've refinanced my house 3 times. It's not close to being paid off. And I've got these real expensive car payments. And I just put my kids through school and their college was really expensive. So they're just finally kind of reaching this panic spot that they've been making such a healthy income. They've just never thought about the money. They just worked hard and paid the bills and put the kids to college and took the fancy vacations and did the things. So when they kind of come across, when they hit that brick wall moment, the best thing I found to do is probably what you guys do is like, let's just look at some numbers. Like, let's just break things down. Let's look at how much money do we need to be able to retire or semi-retire at a certain age. And then let's look at, okay, how much money do we need to really start investing to be able to get close to that type of net worth that we need to be able to retire on. And then we probably are going to have to restructure a lot of your spending, but you're probably going to have to start spending a lot less than you're used to. You have to make a lot more, but you don't want to work any harder. So we're going to have to really restructure the lifestyle and some of these expenses that we can use that money now that we're going to have to go all in and really start getting, you know, all in on investing because we have an extra 10 plus years to make up. So it's just working with that. It, you know, I take them through like a 12-week process and journey where we break this down. And so in these little bite-sized pieces, they come to accept and realize and actually get excited that this next phase of life is what they're, the mindset shift is like, I have to give up these things I've become accustomed to the move in the mindset like, hey, I have no problem doing that because in 10 years I can actually be retired and I'm going to be focused on that. And I'm super excited about being able to walk away from my business. So it's just working with them and these adjustments. But ultimately, it's lack of clarity that causes a lot of financial anxiety is what I found. Is so when I can give them clarity, and I know this with you guys too, it's just looking at some numbers, like how much money do we need? What type of income gap do we have? What type of net worth gap do we have? What type of overspending situation are we in? And we can get clarity and break down these numbers and just know what we need to fill these gaps and create a plan around it. It just becomes pretty easy. But it's giving people clarity, that knowledge and clarity that helps them reshape that mindset.
Makes a lot of sense. You know, you've hit on a bigger picture topic that personally I'm so passionate about, which is, you know, these pain points of sacrifice today, but also something that can be overlooked, which is regret later in life when you look back at your former self and have some regret. And unfortunately, we've seen that with some older folks that regret is a lot more powerful than the sacrifice today. And so weighing those out, because that should hopefully create some action to everything you just mentioned. So
yeah, I mean, the big thing is, you know, when you were talking and what you kind of alluded to was these are trade-offs. Like, we just have to bring it to mind. Like, your story is so common, as you said, where you get so laser focused. I mean, these people are really successful and they've done a great job of this one very specific thing. But unfortunately, they're not able to take a step back. They need sometimes somebody to be able to help them take a step back and be able to look at it from an objective viewpoint. We all need help, right? We all need a coach or someone to help us.
Accountability partner.
And that's where we come in. That's where you come in, is helping take a step back and looking at it and say, all right, let's game plan this thing. And, you know, we might have to do some trade-offs, but the end game is going to be way better, because if you have all your money tied up into your business and you don't get out of that, look what happened to Christine. Look what happened to you, right? We don't want that to happen to anybody. It's like owning one stock in your whole life and just hoping that it pays off, because there's some incredible stocks out there that have collapsed, and we don't want that to happen to you, the business owner.
Yeah, especially if you're in a service business where, you know, the assets are you. You are the business.
Yeah, you make a great point, and I completely agree with you, is that people go about this money thing alone. And I mean, you know, and I know there's a lot more to it than meets the eye. And people usually don't realize this, not until it's too late, but they wish, those that I work with wish they'd started 10 years ago. You know, that's the regret, like, man, why didn't I do this 10 years ago type of thing. But we need help. Like anything in life, when it's really important, I know I need help. I get coaches. I pay for advice. I surround myself with others that are in a similar situation and want to get to a similar destination through masterminds or accountability groups or dinner parties or friendships, you know, fill in the blank. And I just really believe that not enough people actually get any type of financial coaching and advice. And if they do, it's much later than you know, we would like that to be. So, you know, if we are in a marriage and it's, you know, we love our partner, but we're going through a tough time, what do? We go get coaching, we go get therapy, we go get some help because we're both motivated to solve this problem and make a marriage not only that will work, but that will be better, that'll last and be better. And I see money with the same thing, that people have a lot of financial strife, regardless of how much income they make, and they don't seek help. And it's very hard to do alone. It's really hard to figure out.
Yeah.
Couples aren't great talking about money, so they're not figuring it out with their partner. Money tends to be many times that wedge between the two. And so I just really can't, you know, emphasize enough the importance of get a money coach, get a money advisor, talk to those, like, you know, that are us, they're out here wanting to teach it and help others. And, you know, you guys are taking this public and trying to push out information so that, you know, consumers can be more educated when it comes to money.
You know, gosh, yeah, money is sensitive for a lot of people. And I think that's one of the reasons why they don't seek out that help, probably pride as well. But we'll talk about religion, we'll talk about marriage with it. We just don't talk about money. And we're all trying with it to change that narrative. So we so appreciate you opening up to us about this and sharing your experience and what you do and all the profound help you've helped others. If they wanted to find you, where do they go? Help us share where you're at and how you go about helping.
Easy. On that note is that money is so emotionally and highly charged. And what I found, because I, like you, we see what's happening between closed doors. And so publicly, we know everything that looks on Facebook, but in the business and entrepreneurial world, everybody's super successful and everybody's making a boatload of money and everybody's an influencer and money's just dropping in their pocket. And it appears that everybody is making fistfuls of money, like with all the stuff that they're doing and their businesses are growing and they're super financially successful. So that's what it looks like on TV. And so what that causes everybody else is to think that everybody else has got money figured out but me. Everybody else is making a bunch of money but me. And so it creates this inferiority and this fear of, like, I must be the only one that doesn't have it figured out. So it isolates because we think we're the only one. And the truth is, I'm guessing, which you guys would agree, this would be your truth too, very few people have it figured out. I mean, I know the stats. I could just list off a bunch of data stats. Families do not have money figured out in this country, probably in the world, but in this country. So you're not alone. Where it looks like everybody else is doing well financially, behind closed doors, they're not. I see their books. I see their numbers. I hear the stories. You guys do too. So don't let that feeling or insecurity, like, get in the way of asking for help. So just a kind of final words there. I say to find me is my YouTube channel. I, like you, love teaching this. And just, I get on my whiteboard, just teach really simple financial principles. My whole passion and mission is financial education and just really teach us how to think about money. Just the principles, the tools, and with knowledge is power, we can really radically change our families, our legacies, everything by just a little bit of financial education.
Yeah. The YouTube channel is called what?
At Christina Wise, which is my name.
Now you know why I called her a gangster.
Absolutely.
Great conversation. Thank you.
Well, we do have one final small thing.
We have a surprise for you, Christina, something we haven't shared before, but every episode of Ed's Edge, we conclude with a food for thought. He's so excited he knocked off the mic.
I've done this before.
A food for thought, which is...
It's Ed's food for thought. Yeah. Now, I have to ask you, do you like to cook?
I'm not very good in the kitchen, but okay. I'm trying to get better.
You asked her if she likes it though, Ed.
I know, right. My wife says the exact same thing. So it's good because we compliment each other. I love to cook. I love food. And so this piece of the episode is always something I either share a recipe or a great meal or a great restaurant. We've done a lot of episodes, so I'm constantly looking for new ones. So I have one. It wasn't today, but it was this weekend. So my wife's, my nephew's getting married, and my wife said, "Why don't you do I guess these bridal showers things or whatever?" And
no big deal.
It was at our house, and so my sister-in-law, who does not like to cook either, asked me if I could make the appetizer. So I did a lot of investigation. It's not hard work, but I found a wonderful honey and garlic meatball appetizer slow cooker thing. So as you can tell, I'm like a chef. I call it things and stuff. So I've never claimed to be a chef. I just like to cook good food.
A dose of that.
I keep it simple.
That's the recipe.
Right. Yeah. So it's got honey, it's got garlic, it's got brown sugar. And then you use the little, toothpicks to be able to eat it. It was a raving success, I gotta say. I ate a lot of them myself. So we're gonna put that in the show notes as well. And it's super easy, so enjoy.
Thank you. Perfect. I can't wait. I don't know where to go to find good recipes, so thank you.
Yeah, well, if you check out the podcast, at the bottom of the podcast, there's about at least 20 or 30 in there. And they're mostly pretty simple. Because I don't like a lot of hard work. I just like good food. Thank you so, so much for everything that you've provided for us and our audience today. And we look forward to continuing conversations with you in the future.
Yeah, my pleasure, and ditto. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for watching. We'll talk to you next time.
This podcast represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time, should not be relied upon as investment advice, and is not intended to predict or depict performance of any investment. Any specific recommendations or comparisons that are made as to particular securities or strategies are for illustrative purposes only and are not meant as investment advice for any viewer.